This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Any trees we plant, we have to really monitor and protect them the first 50 years or so till they get big enough. But once they get that size, it looks like they become fireproof.
Can we plant enough trees to mitigate the effects of climate change? This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Rick Landman, a physician and historical ecologist, who believes the answer to this question lies specifically in the type of trees we plant, namely more redwoods. We discuss the truly amazing features of these West Coast natives. They're fire-resistant, rot-proof, and a great carbon sink for greenhouse gas emissions. In our discussion, Landman outlines what makes these trees such a vital weapon in the fight to clean up our air, and what he's doing to help restore the mighty redwood to its former glory. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Rick Landman. Rick is a physician scientist and a historical ecologist. Rick, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex.
So first, for our listeners who may not be familiar with those terms, physician scientist and historical ecologist, give us a little bit of a snapshot of your background. It's quite varied and interesting.
So as a physician, and I'm still an actively practicing physician, I have published over 130 peer-reviewed scientific publications, the vast majority in medicine, and now increasingly in ecology, specifically historical ecology, that is trying to better understand what California's flora and fauna looked like, 150 years ago, before the Gold Rush came and changed everything.
So one of the bedrocks, if you will, of the climate movement has been planting trees. We've had so many guests on over the years talking about the efficacy of planting trees. Bill Gates famously has written recently that he doesn't really believe in this effort. He thinks that it's not necessarily unhelpful, but he thinks that there are better ways to tackle climate. Your research in the redwood tree tells us otherwise. Why don't you expand?
You're right. Bill Gates's book in 2021, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster, said you can't plant enough trees to sequester all this carbon we're emitting into the atmosphere and warming the world. And he was wrong for the same reason that most of the reforestation projects that are aiming to sequester carbon fail. That's because they use the wrong tree species. Gates said the trees are too small, there's not enough room on the world to plant all those trees, and besides, they don't live that long, and 100 years later, if they die, they re-release their carbon into the air. This is not true with coast redwoods, one of our two California native species, because they have biomasses orders of magnitude greater than average trees. A single coast redwood has as much carbon in it as 2.5 acres of an eastern forest, for example. They grow fast, and they never stop growing and putting on wood and taking carbon out of the air. They do it for free. And most importantly, in California, they're extremely fire resistant.
Yes, that's critical in this state.
In our state, in California, we've lost 29% of our forests since 2000. So from 2000 to 2023, 29% of our forests burned in wildfires or drought-related disease and death. We need to replant with fire-resistant trees, which led us to our latest study.
Yes, so how have you gone back into the historical record to find out the best way to tackle this approach and maybe explain how you're using AI and machine learning to do so?
Sure. So the two problems with reforestation to sequester carbon are the wrong tree species was selected. And California is blessed. We have coast redwoods and giant sequoias. They both have these same properties, huge biomass, fire resistance, incredible longevity. So they keep the carbon for literally 2,000-3,000 years. The second reason these reforestation projects fail is they plant in the wrong places. So I said, okay, I'm doing historical ecology. Where did the redwoods grow before in Santa Clara County, right? Santa Clara County is Silicon Valley. It's at the south end of San Francisco Bay. We have a coast range here. The coast mountains are called the Santa Cruz Mountains. There are very few redwoods that grow in our county. And they're basically just the inland side of these coastal mountains. So the first thing I did was get a map of historical sawmills. And almost all of our redwoods, 95% of them were cut off by 1860, maybe 1870 at the latest.
So California's population was pretty insignificant by 1860. Yes, there was the gold rush, and we think of people just coming in here and panning for gold, but they were also obviously cutting down an awful lot of trees.
Correct. The gold rush brings this surge to San Francisco and San Jose. The rapid development, right? People made probably more money selling shovels and picks than they did actually going up and looking for gold. The building of San Francisco and San Jose led to complete deforestation of redwoods in Santa Clara County and most of the San Francisco Peninsula. The sawmills had to be built in the redwoods because the logs were so colossal, you couldn't drag them to your sawmill. So basically, after you completely clear cut your redwoods, you would then move your sawmill further up into the mountains, coast range towards the coast. The map of historical sawmills, however, did not include an important historical tree. There's a tree called El Palo Alto. The first Spanish explorer, Portola, in 1760-ish, when he discovers San Francisco Bay, he camps under this giant redwood tree. But it's down on the plain in the Santa Clara Valley. It's not up on the side of the mountains. This raised the question for us, how far down did this old redwood forest that we've lost, how far down did it come? And if we could replant it, maybe accounting for a little bit of global warming, how much carbon could it sequester? So I teamed up with a NASA Ames research scientist named Dr. Christopher Potter, who was very familiar with AI and machine learning. And he applied this model to Santa Clara County, asking the question, where is the optimal habitat for redwoods? And we just published this as a preprint while it's still in review. The results were shocking. First of all, the results look like they're very valid because his modeled optimal habitat for redwoods is just this western sliver of Santa Clara County. It includes where all the old sawmills were historically and a little more. If we replanted this 101 square miles, just a western sliver of Santa Clara County, Santa Clara County is an inland county. We're not on the coast by the ocean, so we don't have the fog that redwoods love. So just this western sliver of Santa Clara County, if we replanted it in 15 years, it would sequester 2.3% of the whole state of California's carbon emissions. This maybe 2.3% doesn't sound like a lot, but remember, we're an inland county. We have just a teeny sliver of habitat for redwoods. If you took a coastal county like San Mateo County or Sonoma County and replanted that historic redwood habitat, they have 10 times more redwood habitat. They might sequester each county 20% of the whole state's. I believe we could sequester.
Can you say that one more time? I think there was some chair noise there. Just each county, just whatever you repeat, I think got.
These coastal counties that have 10 times more redwood habitat might sequester each of them 20% of the whole state's carbon emissions. Well, there's a dozen counties that are historic redwood habitat in California. 8 are coastal, 4 are inland. These coastal counties have huge more potential. I believe we could sequester 100% of California's carbon in 15 years if we applied the same model we did for Santa Clara County to these other counties or even further north into Oregon and Washington.
Boy and dog, looking for the rainbow. a day. Walking by the river and running like a blue streak through the fields and streams and meadows, laughing all the way. Oh, a redwood tree, please let us under. When we were young, we used to go under the redwood tree.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Rick Landman. He's a physician scientist and a historical ecologist. So, Rick, we're talking about the idea of a mass replanting and resurgence of redwood trees to mitigate climate change effects and become carbon sinks, if you will. How realistic is this? Like, when you're talking about replanting Santa Clara County, how fast do redwood trees grow? And with a changing landscape in terms of temperatures and precipitation, are there other opportunities for redwood trees being planted in non-traditional areas?
Great questions. First of all, how feasible? It's very feasible and not expensive at all. My five sons and I got 250 redwoods from Cal Fire, that's the California State Tree Nursery, because all our trees are burning up. They've established this incredible tree nursery. Got 250 redwood saplings for free. My five sons and I planted them in 2 hours. Basically, 40 people could plant 101 square miles of redwood habitat in our county in about 3 months. Now, the land is the most important part of this cost-wise, but 78% of the land where the redwood forest used to be is already conserved and protected. It's held by land trusts. So they, I think, have done an incredible job. This all started with the Semper Virens Fund and Save the Redwoods, literally 1901. They start buying land where there's still some redwoods. But as I mentioned, 95% of the old growth redwoods are lost. And the bigger opportunity now is not to buy land with redwoods, but to plant these conserved lands with new redwoods and reestablish the old forests.
So those saplings that you and your sons planted, when will they be mature?
So it will take about 15 years before they start really doing the job of sequestering carbon. 15 years basically gets them to 40, 50 feet tall. That's when they'll bust through the oak woodland canopy that exists today. Right now, these lands are grassland, chaparral, and oak woodlands. Once they get out of the shade and above the oak woodland forest canopy, they take off. And they never slow down. They literally, until they die, get hit by lightning or fall over from a windstorm. For 2,000 years, they keep adding carbon more and more and more, which is different from most other trees. Most other trees, when they get old, they slow way down in the amount of carbon they sequester.
And explain a little bit more on how redwoods are unique in their fire-resistant qualities.
We had a mega fire.
I don't know, actually, in their fire-resistant qualities.
Yeah. So redwoods, coast redwoods and giant sequoias, have both adapted to this, you know, hot, arid Mediterranean climate we have in California. They have no resin in their bark. That's very unusual for a coniferous or cone-bearing tree. There's no resin in the bark, and the bark gets really thick.
And this is probably one of the reasons why they've been so highly sought after for building materials, I imagine.
They're also incredibly rot-resistant, especially when they get to be like 1,000 years old. They start sequestering chemicals so that they won't decay, because they have to hold up this gigantic tree structure. It's actually the rot resistance that probably makes them so valuable. But actually, young redwood is not so rot resistant. At any rate,
they have low resin,
thick bark. Those are the first two components. And then something called epicormic sprouting. That is, We had a mega fire in Big Basin Redwood State Park in Santa Cruz County. It's only about 15 miles from here in Santa Clara County. It was a mega fire, a canopy fire, where the flames got so high, the top of the trees were killed. This would kill most trees. All the branches are burned off. All the needles are gone. But because of epicormic sprouting, the next year, these trees looked like what we call fuzz sticks, just clothed in green needles all the way up and down their blackened, charred trunks. They looked like blackened telephone poles. And now it's 4 years later, almost five, and there's new branches all along these trees. So all the wood in that tree trunk survived the fire. It looks like they have to get about 1.5, a little more than 1.5 feet in diameter at breast height before they're big enough for that bark to protect them from the fire. So we'd have to, any trees we plant, we'd have to really monitor and protect them the first 50 years or so till they get big enough. But once they get that size, it looks like they become fireproof.
And they're not invasive like some other tree species which have proliferated globally. I'm thinking more like eucalyptus trees, which I know a lot of Californians may associate that smell of eucalyptus as being part of their native habitat, but these trees did not originate in California. But how transferable are redwood trees to other ecosystems? You mentioned how they prefer fog. Can they grow without fog?
Yes, they can grow without fog. They just need access to water. So this famous historic 1800-year-old tree, El Palo Alto, here in Silicon Valley, it's well out of the fog belt, but there's a stream next to it. So all of our optimal habitat to buffer against global warming, the model basically said you've got to be within 150 meters of a drainage. There's got to be some water supply when there's no fog. So they do fine. Redwoods have been planted as far north as Seattle, as long ago as almost 100 years ago, and they do fine. So these trees have incredible genetic diversity. They can thrive in colder climes and warmer climes than they do today, but they don't spread by seed very well at all. They mostly just regenerate when they die. You get, giant redwood falls over. Around its base, new clonal sprouts shoot up. And when these mature, they become what we call redwood fairy rings. And if you look at a redwood forest carefully, it's almost all just a bunch of rings of these trees. And this happens over and over again. So a redwood forest can't move itself very fast because the seeds just, they dampen off. They're just not successful. It's really a clonal reproduction. If the climate gets too warm, these forests aren't going to be able to move very fast. We need to move them ourselves, as is called assisted migration. This has been done in Oregon, in Washington. People are talking about maybe even doing Vancouver Island with redwoods, because we need fireproof, long-lived, huge biomass trees to replace what we've lost.
And what about beyond North America? Is that possible?
Sure. The Smoky Mountains would be a great place for redwoods. There are some there. England, the United Kingdom's famous for collecting trees from all over the world. They thrive there and have been there probably more than 150 years. So they have incredible genetic diversity. They can live a lot of different places. I aim to try to restore trees to their native habitat. So the whole idea of historical ecology is, what was here? Did we forget what we used to have? And could we rewild with the same plants and animals because they're well adapted to the rest of this local ecosystem?
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land
and rambled, and I followed my footsteps through the sparkling sands of...
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Rick Landman. He's a physician, scientist, and a historical ecologist. Rick, we started our conversation referring to one billionaire, Bill Gates, and how he was a little skeptical about the tree planting efforts around the globe. Let's turn to another billionaire, Mark Benioff, the Oracle and Salesforce entrepreneur who has a organization, I think it's called 1T.org, which their mission is to plant a trillion trees. Are redwoods part of this calculation for this organization?
I don't know if they are, but as I mentioned earlier, these reforestation efforts often fail because they pick the wrong tree species and they plant them in the wrong location. So accounting for global warming is an important part of our model. So we excluded what we call suboptimal habitat that we think is going to be too hot and dry by 2100 in our model. So they need to apply the same technology. We basically sampled giant redwoods growing nearby, identified what the key characteristics were that let these trees get 300 feet tall and 1500 years old, and then applied that to our county, and the AI or machine learning model then spits out the coordinates down to 30 meters where you could plant these trees. So I don't know if 1tree.org is using that kind of sophistication. I do know that the majority of these efforts fail because they use the wrong tree species in the wrong location. Native plants and trees are really important to use. Each native plant or tree has on average about 10 insects that have evolved with it. Trees and plants secrete chemicals that are toxic to most bugs because they don't want to get eaten by bugs. But on average, as about 10 bugs develop a way to tolerate it. Monarch butterflies and milkweeds are a great example of this. Milkweed sap is toxic to most insects, but monarch butterflies, caterpillars love it and are immune to it. When you buy a plant from the nursery in America and that plant comes from Europe or Asia, they'll often say it's pest-free. That's because none of our insects can tolerate these plants from Europe and Asia. They didn't evolve with them. The insect apocalypse, which we're probably in, is partly due to this planting of the wrong species in our suburban yards, and with huge declines in insect populations, which are the base of the food chain for birds and reptiles, and then course we're much higher in the food chain from that. But so I'm big on native plants and really trying to understand what used to grow here. Does it have the right properties for us to reestablish in this fire prone world and in a warming world, and use the AI model to identify where can we put them back.
Well, that brings me back to my original question about invasive species and eucalyptus trees versus redwood trees. If we planted redwood trees in England or in Thailand or wherever, could we encounter these similar problems where ecosystems are affected adversely?
Well, the insects in the United Kingdom cannot live on a redwood. They would not have any idea what's going on. The eucalyptus, I'm glad you brought them up again. They've actually had the opposite strategy from redwoods and sequoias. They actually secrete huge amounts of resin. Their whole and bark that strips off and drops to the ground like kindling. They seem to have evolved to promote fire, destroy the whole forest because they're so good at resprouting from their base. And then they're the only trees, their young saplings have no competition. In our honeybees, which are Eurasian, right, they can use eucalyptus flowers, but they, you know, I don't think there's any insects here that can eat their leaves. They're actually herbicidal. Their leaves actually make it hard for our native plants to grow underneath them. So picking the right species really matters. I would prefer that to be native species. And then making sure you've got the right habitat, which is where the AI, the machine learning model, comes in, and not just guess.
So you mentioned your work in tracking down remnants of these old sawmills. Dive a little deeper, if you can, into the historical aspect of what you're doing and how it could inform a more effective redwood proliferation strategy moving forward, Rick. Like, talk about your methodology and maybe some of the more surprising discoveries that you made along the way in your research.
So the common wisdom here was that redwoods would grow on the foggy coastal side of the Coast Range, but not much on the inland side where Santa Clara County is, because it's relatively fog-free. So what's the evidence? 95% of these trees are gone. When they're cut down, the old growth, you know, they try to re-sprout. But if you're grazing cattle, they just eat the sprouts, and then eventually the roots are just out of carbohydrates. They can't re-sprout anymore. People didn't know and assumed that redwoods just weren't here. The city I live in, it's near Palo Alto. My neighbor has a redwood tree. The circumference at breast height is 20 feet, 11 inches. This is a massive tree. And if you look at the maps of where redwoods used to be historically, it wouldn't include this area. It's just wrong, because these trees got logged off really quickly. And then biologists and ecologists start forgetting. We call it shifting baseline syndrome. It started with fish biologists. And they said, you know, there was actually a book published. And there's no evidence that Atlantic salmon actually used the rivers and streams in New England. Well, that's just shifting, but they just forgot. And biologists tend to think that things are the way they were when they were a little kid, not the way they were 150 years ago or 200 years ago. So I study the past to better understand how we can fix the present for the future. When I started doing this, California Fish and Wildlife, the map for beaver excluded the Sierra Nevada mountain chain in the eastern part of our state. Well, this makes no sense, because there are beaver in every mountain range in North America, from the tundra to northern Mexico.
Rick Landman, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. A pleasure to be here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Earth, Wind, and Fire, Van Morrison, and Woody Guthrie and Arlo Guthrie. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.